Hai listeners, kembali lagi bersama gue Jo Chris di podcast PPI Belanda. Podcast kali ini akan berbahasa Inggris di mana kita akan berbincang dengan narasumber kita, Rens van der Voorst, tentang masihkah ada privasi di era digital ini. Namun, sebelum kita terjun lebih lanjut, apakah kalian tahu cara paling mudah untuk mengirimkan uang ke mancanegara?
Wah, emang ya Cid, kalau transfer uang dari Indo ke Belandanya manual dari bank ke bank tuh butuh waktu yang lama sama biaya transfer yang cukup banyak. Ribet banget ya.
Lah, lo masih manual gitu emangnya, Bir?
Iya, emang ada cara lain, Cid?
Hari gini kan udah ada Transfers.
Oh, Transfers. Gimana tuh emangnya, Cid?
Iya, dengan lo pakai Transfers, buat kirim uang ke Belanda jadi cepat, aman, dan mudah. Uang udah bisa diterima sehari setelah hari transaksi pengiriman uang tersebut. Juga, biaya adminnya jauh lebih terjangkau. Cuma 74.000 buat setiap transaksinya loh.
Oh, wah ini solusi masalah gue yang selama ini gue cari sih.
Iya, langsung aja deh, Bir. Dan buat teman-teman podcast PPI Belanda yang lagi dengerin, untuk download aplikasi Transfers di App Store atau Play Store. Transfers juga nggak ada hidden fee yang dikenakan setelah lo ngelakuin transaksi. Plusnya lagi nih, kalau lo pakai kode referral PPI Belanda 898473, itu lo bakal dapet gratis biaya transaksi pertama kali. Transfers, cara paling mudah dan nyaman untuk kirim uang ke mancanegara.
Rens.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to PPI Belanda Podcast, the podcast of the Indonesian Student Association in the Netherlands. So before we start, you're the head of IT innovation, techno-philosopher, TEDx speakers, author for multiple books. You're living the life.
Yeah, do you think so?
Yeah, you're the man.
Okay, thanks. Well, yeah, well, I try.
Okay.
I do my best.
Right.
And, I really think the subject in which I'm interested in, which is mainly digital ethics, how to have technology have a positive impact on people, I think that is the subject of the future. So I'm not only living the life, but I'm doing important work also.
But you're a bit different than us. You're not using WhatsApp, right?
No, I don't use WhatsApp. And I have two reasons for it. Reason number one is I don't like Facebook. I don't like the way they collect all the metadata. I don't like the way they do all this surveillance on you. That's one. But the other hand is if I do WhatsApp, I do it all the time because I'm also prone to addiction.
Okay.
So then I try to be more interesting than my friends. I do all these things in groups. So it's also some kind of self-protection.
Okay, let me stop you a bit. Can you please, because it's from my side, can you please like quickly introduce yourself real quick?
Yeah, sure. Okay, my name is Rens van der Voorst. I work and live in the Netherlands. I'm 50 years old, which is a pity to say. I live in Breda, which is just like 60 kilometers south of Eindhoven. And I work at Fontys for 20 years now. I started as an IT director and responsible for infrastructure and stuff like that. But slowly I moved to more like experiments, innovation, and then I moved to digital ethics. And I do all kinds of things surrounding digital ethics. I teach, but I also do research. I create all kinds of tools. And I write books on the topic. And all those books are meant to be funny because they are in Dutch, but they are meant to be really funny, but also a little bit confronting. So they are designed to make you think. That's the idea. Yeah. And personally, I'm a big soccer fan.
Yeah. Which team?
My own team, my home team, which is NAC. It's from Breda. Okay. It plays one level lower than the highest level in the Netherlands. And that's it. I like to do local. I'm a local soccer fan.
Yeah. Right. You gotta support your local team.
Right, yes.
I also, last week, watched your TEDx video about the hotel handbook.
Yeah, the towel balance.
The towel balance.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I do a lot of speaking on conferences and stuff like that. Yeah. But I also like to do the TEDx talks because they force you to upgrade yourself as a speaker. That's fun. But also I'm very committed to trying to create a more equal society.
Right.
And I think it all comes together in people claiming beach shares with towels.
Right.
I was thinking if I can solve the problem with the towels,
yeah,
and maybe this is like an inspiration for solving bigger problems. Yeah. but I don't know. It's still there.
It's still there. Yeah. For the listeners, it's a very good TEDx video. You have to check it out. The Tao Balance by Rens van der Voorst. So let's move a bit serious. Today we're going to talk about, is there still privacy in this digital era? But before we go deep, maybe what is privacy in general?
Well, I think it's important to make a distinction between the concept of privacy, which is a fundamental human right, and that's something different than the concept of data protection. So those can be totally different. So I can invade your privacy without doing anything with data. For example, by spying on you with the binoculars through the window or something like that. And the fact that privacy is so important in the fundamental human rights is because if you don't have privacy, you can be a person. So it's really, really important. Because if I knew everything about you, then we couldn't have a relationship anymore. So it is important for someone to be who he is, to have some privacy. So that's why it's a fundamental right. So that's really important to remember. So I think privacy is a really, really important concept for people to develop themselves, to live happy lives. And we should be really careful with it. And maybe it's also important because almost everything is becoming data. Like we're creating data now. We're not having just a conversation, but it's also being digitalized. And because everything is becoming data, like we used to have a conversation, but now it's WhatsApp data and stuff like that. So privacy and data protection are getting closer and closer and closer. So when you think about data protection, you're almost always also thinking about privacy. So that's a really important concept, I think.
Right. And as you mentioned, we're creating this podcast. We're also making data, right? And we're in this building, there's like security cameras all over the place. Our phone is on the table. I'm using a smartwatch. Everything collecting data. So how bad it is?
Yeah, I think it's pretty bad. Because, I read if you are a Londoner, you will be caught on tape like 300 times a day. Now, if you're from London.
Oh, London.
London is like the capital of the world with CCTV cameras. Then you will be captured on image for 300 times a day on an average Londoner. So you will. So the question is, do you still have privacy? But I think it's really, really an important concept because it's not only data that is captured, but it's also the question, what do people do with data and how transparent is it for you? So that's also really important. So for example, if you have these big corporate companies that get all your data, like the Facebooks and the Google and the Amazon, do you still have the opportunity to be like a person or a civilian, or are you only a consumer? Because you only treat it as a consumer. And it's the same with all kinds of governments. Like, are you still able to think what you want to think, to say what you want to say? You really have to think about that. So I think it's really, even when there is more and more and more and more data, you were saying, well, you have the podcast and the phone and the cameras in the Fontys building. So maybe privacy is a lost cause. But I think it's the other way around. Because there's all those stuff, we really need to think harder and harder and harder on privacy and have great regulation there.
But isn't it for our safety?
Well, I don't know exactly. I think that's often there is some misconception about the risks we are having. So it's always, we are filming you for your own safety. You know those little signs? Yeah. But I don't think it's true.
Why?
Because I think the risk is really, really small, but we're not good at assessing risks. So we think that if there's a risk, like with terrorist attacks, if you have a terrorist attack, and maybe I would like to say, okay, I would like to be in the vicinity of a terrorist attack one day. Just try to find out where one is and just look at it. I will never manage because the chances are too small. And still, the chances that I will be victim of a terrorist attack is really, really small. And still I put up with all those measures and measures and measures and measures which are invading my privacy. And that's because we as a civilian, but also as a government, we are not good at assessing risks. And we want our government to do something. We don't care what, but we want them to be, they have to look like they're taking action. And often they do that with all kinds of privacy invading data surveillance solutions. But they're not really working. There is no evidence that things are getting safer because of all those measures. I don't think so.
But we have GDPR, right? Right here in the Europe.
Yeah, it's incredibly important, yeah.
So, I mean, it regulates you, the company, and also the government to collect data.
That's true, but there's also, there's like a big issue with GDPR.
Okay.
Because GDPR is, I think it's great regulation. I think Europe can be like the guiding continent for the future.
Wait a minute. Maybe the listeners of this podcast is from Indonesia, so they don't know GDPR. Okay. Can you like explain it real quick?
Sure. GDPR stands for the General Data Protection Rule. It's European legislation, and it's really, really strict when it comes to privacy. So it really is saying, okay, you need to do privacy by design. You can't collect data you don't need. You can't collect data for a purpose. You can't explain really, really clearly to why are you collecting that data. You can't store data longer than absolutely necessary. You have to protect the data. All kinds of rules like that. And I think it's really, really important because it talks about data protection, but it also, like I explained earlier, talks about privacy. The important aspect is the General Data Protection Rule, the GDPR, is only for companies and organizations.
All right.
So it's not for individual citizens. So if you are going to install like an app and you are agreeing to all the terms, you can just do that. Just like you have the right to have children or another fundamental right. So there is some problem. But I think the idea of the GDPR and the morality behind it is incredibly important. And I also predict that in Europe, there will be, in the next 10 years, way stricter measures against like American tech companies.
Right.
Yeah. So we are going to say, okay, you need to have like a European version of Facebook or WhatsApp to be able to function here on our continent, or like a European version of Amazon. You can't keep on collecting data from our users without asking them.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because you mentioned agreeing with terms and condition of an application that you download. So how do you know if like an application respect your privacy or not?
You
shall
don't.
We just read all the terms?
No, you can't read it. I think I was really inspired by a Dutch artist because I always like to look at artists because they can show us the future of technology. So people that do art and technology together are always inspiring. And there's a Dutch artist, he's a privacy artist. And he's called Tijmen.
Oh, sorry.
No, no problem.
Banksy?
No, it's not Banksy. No, no. But Banksy is great because Banksy once said that invisibility is a superpower.
Right.
So why give away all your data? Why tell everything who you are, everyone who you are, while invisibility is a superpower? But this is another guy, and he created he's called Tijmen Schep. But he created a so-called privacy label. And it's like a open source software in which companies can explain in a one-pager what they're doing with collecting data. It's a really smart kind of label, like a label you have in your clothing that you can see if it's made under the right conditions. If you look at a terms and agreement, you need sometimes to read 6,000 words. But you can't read them because it's all legalese. It's like you're reading information and data. Do you understand the difference between information and data? Or content? Those are all like container kind of terms you can't really understand. So even if you read everything, it's still really complex to understand. Because, for example, WhatsApp will never look at your content, at what you're saying in your data. They can't do it. It's encrypted. But they will collect everything considering metadata. When did you app someone? Where were you? How fast did you do it? Who are your contacts? All those stuff, which is way more valuable than what you're saying in the app itself. So when you're reading, okay, WhatsApp will never store your content, you think that's a good thing, but they do all those other things, and it's really hard to read. It's almost undoable. So that's why maybe like a privacy label in which you can say. Like in the Netherlands, we have, if you buy meat, you have like a three-star kind of symbol. So you can see, did this cow or chicken or pig had a good life.
A better life.
Yeah, yeah, better life. A better life symbol. And it's really clear because it, 1, 2, 3 stars. It's easy. And you could do the same for like a privacy with apps or stuff like that. So if you download an app from the app store, you could see 1, 2, 3 stars. Let's do it or don't.
Right.
I think that's a good idea. But for now, reading those terms and agreements.
So you mean that the terms and agreements, let's say if we open an application at the App Store or Play Store, the terms and agreements are like the words are being played, you mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard for us to understand, even we are like in the field of ICT.
Yeah, I would say it's impossible to understand. Yeah, yeah, I would say that. It's really, really legalese. So for example, if you ask Google, give me all the data you got for me.
Yeah.
They will only give data that you can recognize, like your search terms and where you were. But the real metadata they collect about you, you will never see. And somewhere in those terms and agreements, you have agreed to have them collected.
True. Yeah. Sure.
So I don't think that's going to work. And that's something we really have to think about.
And you're suggesting that there's like this independent department or organization who label each application whether it has a good privacy or a bad privacy.
Yeah, and that's something that can really, really work, because then, and I predict that privacy will become a selling point. So if you have great regulation, then you get innovation.
Right.
Often people think about, okay, regulation tempers innovation, but that's not true. If you have great regulation and you are really smart about it, then you can create innovation. So I predict you will see all kinds of companies that will say privacy is really important. We're going to build a social media network that is with privacy.
You mentioned privacy is a good sound point, but the reality is there's a lot of Gmail users compared to ProtonMail.
Yeah, that's true, because the big problem here, and I totally agree with you. I don't say that it's going to be easy, right? I'm trying to be optimistic, but the real big problem is humans, we have the 7 deadly sins. You know them? Yeah. And designers, there's this great book. It says, okay, if you want to design an app, you have to use the 7 deadly sins of humans. And one of those sins is sloth. We are lazy. If things are easy, we're going to do them. And those designers of these great companies, they created really, really, really easy kind of software. Like Gmail, it's incredibly easy. It's way more easy than ProtonMail, for example. If you are agreeing to your terms and agreements, when are you doing that? At the final moment. So now I want to download the app. I've already said, okay, this is my name, and this is my, and now I want to download. And the only thing I have to do is click that little check the box.
And if you don't click it, you cannot use it.
No, but they are presenting it to you at just the moment before you are going to buy. And then you have already filled in all kinds of other information. They will never say, okay, first, let's look at the privacy regulations, at the terms and agreements in a simple way. And then if you like them, then you can leave us your name and buy this app or download this, buy this thing from the web shop, whatever. No, that's always totally at the end. Check the box. Because then you have already said, okay, I want to buy that clothes, and this is all my data, it's all my information, and then you have to check it.
So they're collecting it before we agree.
Yeah, they're not collecting it because it's not stored yet, I guess.
Okay.
But they know if you have already filled out all that information and done all that kind of effort, put in all that effort, then you are going to check the box, because now you're at the moment of buying. They won't do it at the beginning, because maybe then you would say, maybe I should check a different web shop. So there can be really easy regulation, like first you need to present in a simple way the privacy aspects of this web shop or app or whatever. And next you can ask people to fill out the data instead of the other way around. But the great designers of those great companies, because you have to think like Facebook has 300 psychologists thinking about design, because they only have like one app for 2 billion users. So they really think about everything. And those are really thinking about the 7 deadly sins. How, like pride and sloth and stuff like that.
to make you to seduce you to not think about privacy.
I've never think about that. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you dealing with your privacy?
Well, as an individual? For me, it's also a struggle, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, that's because how am I doing this? I used to have like a Nokia old-fashioned little phone.
Flip phone.
Yeah, it wasn't the flip phone. I would really like the flip phone. It was like even older, where you could play Snake on it. The old Nokia, the really old Nokia. I used to have that one. It was great because like a battery lifetime of maybe 5 days. Perfect. But then I have to do all these things because I really like a smartphone. I don't like the addictive apps on a smartphone, but the simplicity of a smartphone is of course great. So then I went on a holiday to the United States and I did things like that. And for everything I needed apps to book the train, to book the flights, to go to things like the amusement parks. Almost every time you need an app to create things. Now it's Corona. I went to a field lab. You know what a field lab is?
No.
A field lab is like a controlled experiment where you go to a concert, but you have to prove that you are negative Corona-wise.
Oh, okay.
So I went there on Sunday, and you need an app for this. You need to be tested. You need an app for that. You need an app to show your ticket. So how am I going to function as a person without a smartphone? That's a problem. Because then I have to print all things, but sometimes it's not even more possible to print it. So people are forcing me to have a smartphone. Okay, I don't really care about those apps because those apps are often really regulated because of GDPR, the European apps. They're really, really strict. At this moment, our Corona tracing app in the Netherlands has been killed because there are some problems with privacy. But the smartphone itself, it's not regulated. And I'm a wealthy guy. I make a lot of money at Fontys University. So I buy an iPhone, which is pretty privacy savvy. But if I don't have the money, I have to buy an Android. And an Android is like giving away all my privacy at once. So that's also something that's important, that you have to pay for your privacy today. So I'm trying to think about all these things. What am I doing there? But I'm also buying things through a web shop sometimes. I'm just a person, so it's really hard, it's a struggle. And I'm also on LinkedIn. You could find me. You could find my TED Talks. I'm also trying to put my message out there. And how can I put my message out there without using the same platforms like YouTube and like LinkedIn? It's making choices. I don't use Facebook. I don't use Instagram or WhatsApp or Twitter. But I do use LinkedIn because I think LinkedIn is more like a little bit more white label kind of environment. But it's not great, of course.
If we see you like 5 years from now, are you going to do the same thing? Or maybe you're trying to build, for example, do you know Lightphone?
Yeah, of course.
Are you going to use that for your daily life?
I've pre-ordered it. Yeah, but it's hard because they are really always out of stock.
Ah, okay.
So I really like Lightphone. It's a great solution. And I really would like to have like the credit card version of the Lightphone in my pocket. But for now, I have two SIMs. So when I go to the, often when I go, well, now it's Corona, of course, but when I go with my friends to the soccer game or to the bars or the pubs or whatever, I always take my small phone. I don't take my iPhone because I like to feel that nobody knows where I am. That's a nice feeling. But you take a phone because if there's like an issue where I'm going to be really, really, I said I would be home at 6, but I'm going to be home at 3 o'clock at night. That is nice for my wife to know where I am.
Right.
So that's it. So I do like the idea of the phone, but not the privacy aspect of it. And I hope in 5 years we have better architectures. So for now, you were talking about Gmail and ProtonMail. And if I use ProtonMail and you use Gmail, then I can send you a mail, right? And you can read it and you can send one back to me.
Yeah.
And I'm using this really secure architecture and you're giving your life to the devil with Gmail. But if you use WhatsApp and I'm using Signal or Telegram, we can have a conversation.
True.
And if I'm using like LinkedIn and I want to do something with you on Facebook, we can't have that. So those architectures are closed by design. And I think if architectures are becoming more open, so you can have like messaging apps or social media apps with more platforms connected, then you can make your own choices. Then you can say, okay, I like to pay for a more secure architecture and still be part of the game. Instead of, if I want to be part of this community with my friends, I need to sell everything to give away all my data. So that would be also very great. And in 5 years, I hope that we have to pay for our apps. Like if you had to pay for WhatsApp, even if it was like 15 euros a year or something like that, I think you would ask better questions to WhatsApp. You make like a cost and benefit kind of analysis, and you would say, okay, WhatsApp, I want better privacy because I'm paying for this. And now it's just free. And if it's free, well, suppose you are in a city and you get a free ice cream and you don't like the ice cream, then you wouldn't go back to complain, right? You say, okay, well, it was free. It's a pity. If you would have to pay for it, you would go back. So if we have to pay for our apps, we will ask better things from our apps.
But not everyone thinks the same way.
No.
I mean, I have friends, although they have watched like Social Dilemma or read this kind of stuff, because I think the quote-unquote privacy is getting more, like people become more aware of it nowadays, like in this past month because of the documentaries, the books, and etc. But they just say, oh, I don't have anything to hide. I'm not, let's say, quote-unquote, a bad person or something like that. So yeah. It's okay if they track me, or I don't really care about it. What's your opinion on that?
Well, first of all, I recognize immediately what you're saying.
Yeah,
I have a few things I've thought about that, a few things to say about it. First of all, privacy, data protection, they have all your data. It's like an abstract concept. That's hard, because if it's an abstract concept, how can you make people feel the urgency? So I think we can learn a lot from the climate discussion, because the climate discussion is also like a more or less abstract concept. Like if I drive a really big car, then I don't feel it immediately with my climate or something like that. So we can, and there's a lot of urgency with the climate. So maybe we can learn something from that. That's one. Secondly, I think maybe there should be some really, really big hacks. Because if some things are really hacked and you really feel the disadvantages of not having, of giving away your data, then things maybe will change. So maybe if one day someone hacked Google and I could find out your last 500 search terms, that would be really uncomfortable. If I could type in every name of every person in the world and just find out what they have searched on Google, then people would say, oh my God, I don't want people to know that. Because if they say, I have nothing to hide, I always ask them, okay, what do you really think of me? Can I have your bank code? Can I have, can you tell me in this group of other students who you really dislike? For what reason? There are some students here and you dislike stuff of them. Tell me, please. No, then they don't want to tell, of course, because they do have something to hide. They do have a lot to hide. So saying I have nothing to hide is really, really kind of a stupid way of saying things, but maybe uninformed is a better word. So creating some really great scandals that are more than only credit card data or passwords, but really great scandals that are close to your skin, that would be maybe a way to get people feel the urgency more about data protection. Because now I do understand, you have all these nice, really great apps and you don't really have disadvantages that you can feel about not having any privacy. But maybe in other countries it's different. Maybe from China or from like a totalitarian kind of government, then you, like in Russia or something like that, then it feels really different.
The social credits, right?
China. The social credit system. Yeah, well, I know the social credit system is more like a hype than it's really there, because it's not as sophisticated as you think. But the idea, of course, it's really scary. And it's a totally different culture, because a lot of people from China, they think really different about the concept of privacy. But if you look at like countries like Russia or other countries, it's really scary. And I was reading the book of Edward Snowden.
All right.
That's a permanent record, it's called.
Permanent record.
Yeah, And Ed Snowden is, of course, a hero, right? Because if Obama thinks you're a villain and Trump thinks you're a villain, then you must be a hero. And then you see that the great thing that the difference between a state of a government that is serving its civilians or that's controlling it. It's totally different. And that's something you really have to think about. So privacy is like a corporate issue. We talked about a corporate issue, like all those companies that are looking at you as a consumer, but it's also a government issue. And those are connected because we give all the data to Facebook and to Amazon and Twitter and Google and Apple. And at the back of the systems, the government is getting all the data from those companies in their own systems. So we're feeding two systems. We're feeding the corporate system and the government system. Yeah. And that can be depressive sometimes.
True. I mean, we're just two person talking here, and I'm still thinking, how are we going to fight this?
Well, I think there are a lot of things to be optimistic about.
Right.
Because and there are a lot of things to be pessimistic about.
Right.
Pessimistic maybe is all the technology that's coming. It's Internet of Things. It's having smart fridges. Everything's going to be smart. Cameras everywhere. So technology is really raging on. That's a problem because technology is always faster than regulation. So it's like the tale for Mary Shelley, you know, Frankenstein.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cautionary tale about technology outrunning moral and legal implications. But the optimistic part is, I guess, that we are talking here, that we are aware of it.
Yep.
Like 10 years ago, we thought that companies like Google and Facebook, they were like a gift from God to humanity. Free social media, connecting people, free browsing through all information in the world, no longer there. We now know, okay, there was something wrong with these companies. They are not good or bad, but we do have to regulate them. So the GDPR, the thinking about regulation, the smart innovative companies like Adblocker, they are really killing the ad kind of model from those companies. But also things like blockchain, where you can build peer-to-peer networks that are privacy by design or privacy friendly. You can build like Uber or social media or Airbnb, but without Uber, without Airbnb and without Facebook. You can do that in the future. We are creating the building blocks for that. So that's something to be, more optimistic about. So I'm trying to be optimistic there.
So let's say, you say it in the future, right?
Mm-hmm.
In what year can we see that?
Well, I think those, a lot of things that I was talking about, you can see in the next 10 years.
Next 10 years. But so 2031?
Yeah, maybe, but it will be very exciting,
yeah,
and challenging, sure. And we will see who's going to win because it's also has something to do with politics and how governments are reacting, but also technology. Because I know people are experimenting with like trying to read your mind with technology. So if I can make like a EEG of you, or I can read your brain waves, then I can maybe find out what you're thinking. And if people are going to start to be able to read your minds, then you are totally transparent. And there you go with privacy. So technology can be used to create with blockchain and with all kinds of solutions to make the world way more privacy friendly, or the other way around. So it's not technology that is going to decide who's going to win. It's us, consumers, government, and maybe we're a little bit optimistic. I can be a little bit optimistic there.
So the word is it going to be a utopia or dystopia?
Well, they are often the same, right? Yeah. I don't know if you ever read like books like A Brave New World or A Perfect Day. They're creating like an utopia. Everyone is happy and friendly and woke, and everyone is included and it's lovely, and it's really, really scary because there can be no utopia without less freedom. So maybe I'm more like a dystopia, but then the kind we have now.
Right.
Yeah. So I would like to have a world in which people are, the autonomy of humans is secured. So you can make your own choices, even if it are bad choices. That's, I think, really important. So you have to think, okay, I can make my own choices as long as I'm not harming other people. That's how it should work.
For me, I think it's about the balance between the utopia and dystopia.
Yeah.
I think it's better. So I want to ask you, as an individual, how can I improve my privacy, like in a practical way? What should I do now?
Well, I think there's a lot of things you could do. You could really easily just take some time and invest in your privacy settings. You know, we talked about earlier that all privacy settings, people are lazy. So all privacy settings for you are in your disadvantage. So just try to find out, like, just for an hour, what kind of apps do I have? What are my privacy settings? Because almost every company, because of regulation, needs to have like a privacy-friendly option. Only you have to search for it. So you can do that. So that's just taking 2 hours, sit down with your phone and with your laptop and just do that. That's easy. Secondly, you can really look at your everything you installed and your apps and stuff like that and really think about, do I really need these? So what is this app doing? So like I have like a flashlight app on my phone, but the flashlight app has access to my contacts. So why does a flashlight app need access to my contacts? So you can look at that. So what are the installation of the app and what can it do? But you could also really read into it, read up to all things around privacy, find some books there that are really inspiring. I know some really good Dutch books, but maybe that doesn't work for you, but there are...
Is it your books?
No, it's not my books.
Okay.
No, it's like... But you can read the book of Edward Snowden, Permanent Record, because he really... It's like an exciting book, but he also really explains why it's so important to have privacy. And he doesn't come from the privacy world. Read books about how the internet was thought out and what it became. So it was thought out like a peer-to-peer network with millions of small nodes, and it became a network with six big stars. Like, so how can we get back to that? So you can think about that. So have a better conversation. And just talk about it with your friends. What do you think about it? Stuff like that. Watch The Social Dilemma, but you already did that. But a lot of people can still watch that series. The Netflix series about the Cambridge Analytics scandal. Just try to find out what's happening there.
Right, I'm currently listening to a podcast called Privacy, Security and OSINT, if you know. It's from Michael Basil.
From Bellingcat maybe? No,
Michael Basil.
Okay, and but because OSINT is the idea by Bellingcat, right? The open source investigation. I didn't know that, but also good. So be informed and then think about what you can do for yourself. And maybe use Signal with your friends. Don't use WhatsApp.
I've tried it and I don't have any contacts on Signal.
No, but that's it. It's like the network effect, right?
Yeah.
So if everyone is somewhere, then it becomes more valuable. So more people go there and then there's only a winner takes all. It's like part of the architecture. But maybe you can change it because if a lot of people go to Signal, then that changes. Yesterday, there was this big FBI kind of court case with Signal, because they had to hand over all kinds of data. And they really said, okay, yeah, we can do it because we don't store that data. They could prove it. So they really don't. So why don't we use Signal? It's a good question, right?
Yeah.
So maybe, well, you are doing a podcast for Indonesian students. Start using Signal with your Indonesian students. You can use two apps. That's no problem. So let's start.
And maybe there are some... I've tried with my family.
Yeah.
And there are some features that are not implemented yet in Signal.
Yeah.
So that is available in WhatsApp.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same with the climate, right?
Yeah.
It's having a really big energy consuming car is often also more cool than driving a hybrid Daihatsu. But yeah, you have to make choices. Yeah.
We just have to start.
Yeah, because why do you think that this free app like WhatsApp, which is totally free for you, gives all these great features? Why do you think? Because they have this other kind of revenue model on your data.
And the funny thing is, a lot of people have retracted their support from Facebook because of the issue with Cambridge Analytica. But if you open WhatsApp, it's also from Facebook.
Yeah.
And they're still using it.
Sure. And Instagram is also from Facebook.
True.
So they go from, I don't do Facebook anymore, I go to Instagram, which is more friendly because it's the architecture is less going viral and fake news based and stuff like that. but it's still an application from Facebook. Yeah, well, small steps.
Small step.
Yeah, well, like I can. Yeah,
giant leap.
Yeah, if you know, they sell salads at McDonald's, right?
Right.
Because we consumers said we want something healthy to eat here. We want better products. We are working in a lot with a lot of people are thinking about we want to buy biological vegetables. We want to buy clothes that are not made by children. We want to have buy stuff that is made in an environmentally friendly way. So we are consumers, and as consumers, we have a lot of power. Why don't we use the same power when it comes to our privacy with our technology? Because we are still early there. But we should say, I want technology that has my values at core. So if I'm using YouTube, I want to be able to use YouTube without YouTube stealing my data, without YouTube having algorithms like in a social media that are changing my mind. I want algorithms that are upgrade me, that make me a better person, not a more paranoid person. We should try to do those things. But it's hard, right? Like YouTube, you can do premium.
But you have to,
pay. Yeah, well, but then you get something better.
Yeah.
Because then you don't have those irritating YouTube algorithms anymore. Then you can customize them. Why don't you do it? Start there.
Yeah, I want to discuss more, but we have to keep it like from 30 to 45 minutes.
Okay, sure.
So shall we play a fire questions? So I'm going to mention a verb, for example, chatting or emailing, and you have to mention an application or a way of your choice. I have 6 questions, so first one.
Oh my God, yeah, hopefully I know, because I'm not a technological person, you know. Okay, here we go, try.
Do chat.
Yeah, I would use Signal.
Signal.
Yeah, or don't chat at all.
All right. Why?
Yeah, well,
because just keep it short.
Yeah, it was originally called a short message service, right?
Yeah.
Only for things that are really important. Maybe last remark: we are humans. We are getting often more communicative, but that doesn't mean we're getting more productive. So you're chatting away your life, my friend.
To search.
I would use DuckDuckGo.
DuckDuckGo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not that good as Google because you don't get the greatest results, but still pretty good. And if a lot of people use it, it gets better. That's the same network effect kind of thing.
To email?
Yeah, well, I'm just using my corporate email.
Corporate?
Yeah. If you have that like Fontes email, there's nothing wrong with that because we have all these really, really strict regulations. I can't read your email, never. So, but you could also use like ProtonMail or more protect. There are a lot of really protective email kind of solutions. Don't use free email. That's the idea. You can use email from like a Dutch provider like KPN or Ziggo or that's all no problem. But don't use like a Gmail or Yahoo Mail or whatever.
Right. To video call.
I would use Yetzi.
Yetzi?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Of Big Blue Button. And the problem with those things, I guess, is that they are really friendly at the front end. So if you use Yetzi or Big Blue Button, that's no problem at all. You would, because, well, it's just video. It's not that complicated. But they are not as advanced at the back end. So if like MS Teams or Zoom or stuff like that, it's really easy to connect to like our Fontes kind of user database and organize that. So that's the problem. So I think those companies should be better equipped to be integrated in large organizations. But you can just use Big Blue Button or Yetzi. They're really great. They're open source kind of solutions.
And to browse?
I'm always using the browser from Firefox.
Firefox.
Yeah. Yeah. But don't use Chrome, I would say.
Okay.
But then again, a lot of websites are optimized for Chrome.
Yeah.
When you use Chrome, everything works like a charm.
That's true.
Sometimes I use Edge because that's on my standard on my laptop. And then some websites don't work really well, but they do always work with Chrome. So that's the same problem there.
Yeah. I use Chrome.
Yeah.
Not because I support the, let's say, the collecting data that they do. It's because they have like this add-ons for Google Translate. Because I cannot read the Dutch website, right? I can just click it. Yeah, it's convenience.
Yeah, that's okay. True. And they're really, really good at what they do. That's why it's a shame. They made such a lot of money. They're so good at what they do. they could be so much better for humanity.
True, true. And to navigate, that one is interesting.
Yeah, well, I'm just using my the built-in version at my iPhone, the Apple Cards.
Apple Cards.
Yeah, that's just
Apple Maps.
Apple Maps. I think, yeah, it's called Kaarten. That's Dutch on my phone, and I always use that one. I never use the Google version. So that's, I don't know if it's a good solution. I like to just try to find out myself the way, because it's good for you, for your spatial. It's also good to be in a city you don't know and just walk around. And then you will always reach places you would never think about. So, but I use the standard Apple version. I don't know exactly. I've never really delved into the privacy aspects of all those different kind of cards. But I think this is a great example of companies that can enter the market because they have this privacy-friendly proposition. We can use, we can give you navigation without tracking you.
Right. Okay, so to close the podcast, do you have any message to the listeners of this podcast?
Now, well, I think if you're still listening now, then you thought it was interesting. So that's already great. So that's really nice, I think. Second, we talked about a lot of things that you can do already and watch already, and I should really recommend you to do that because it all starts with awareness. I also recommend my own tool, our own tool, the Technology Impact Cycle tool, which you can find on TICT.io, which has some really great free privacy courses, but also questions which you can ask yourself to check if a technology is privacy friendly or not. So do that. And just try to make conscious decisions. Inform yourself, make conscious decisions. Realize sometimes, okay, sometimes it's not privacy friendly. You can have it all. But try to do some small wins, small steps. Because if all consumers together do that, it will become, like you said, giant leaps. So that's my message.
Cool.
And if you have any questions, whatever, want to ask me something, I'm really easy to find. I'm not really privacy friendly online. So just ask me.
Right. I'm going to put the link of the TICT.io down in the description. So yes or no question to close. Is there still privacy in this digital era?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Rens van der Voorst, Head of IT Innovation and Techno Philosopher. Thank you for listening to Pepe Blanda Podcast, and I'll see you in the next one.